And on this Earth Day, welcome to Midday. As I said, I'm Tom Hall here in Studio A. Today, it's Midday on the Environment. The first Earth Day was celebrated on April 22, 1970. And though conservation efforts in America existed long before that, Earth Day did mark a turning point for the modern environmental movement. On that first Earth Day here in Baltimore, there were speeches and sit-ins and trash cleanups and demonstrations organized at Johns Hopkins University. And when it came to the environment, our city had much to be concerned about. Baltimore had some of the dirtiest air in the country back then, according to a recent report on clean air progress by the Baltimore Metropolitan Council. And in those days, residents could sometimes barely make out the Washington Monument through the haze. In the decades since, cities like Baltimore have made slow progress towards cutting down on air pollution. Later in the show, we'll talk to an advocate pushing to remove fossil fuel-powered heating equipment from Maryland homes. But first, Governor Wes Moore has announced a goal of 100% renewable clean energy in Maryland by 2035. He made that announcement last year from Sparrows Point, at the site of a new factory building parts for offshore wind turbines. Offshore wind plays a prominent role in Maryland's renewable energy plan, so today we're going to take a closer look at development of offshore wind and the challenges that those projects face. My first guest is Aman Azar, a reporter who covers Maryland and Virginia for Inside Climate News. Aman, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be on your show.
Well, it's great to have you. So we have pretty high goals, going 100% clean energy in basically 11 years. Where do you think that stands? I mean, and in particular, how does offshore wind fit into those plans?
Well, that's a great question, Tom. Let's look at a little bit of a broader picture. For Maryland, it's 8.5 gigawatts that the state has pledged to achieving by 2031. That's a lofty goal. And that kind of ties into the national target for the Biden administration, which is 30 gigawatts for 2031. So Maryland kind of figures quite prominently in those national plans as well. As for where we stand, I think it's a little bit of a mixed picture at this point in time. We were doing pretty well and steady, at least in terms of planning, by mid last year. But then, as we know, early in January this year, last December, Ørsted, which is one of the leading manufacturing companies, they decided to bail on two of their projects, kind of totaling 966 megawatts. Now, this in terms of figures, Maryland, this kind of leaves a hole in 2 gigawatts that Maryland was looking to develop in the coming years. But now that we have a hole, Maryland, the legislative session, which just ended, they kind of legislated so they can re-invite some of the revised bids. Because otherwise we'll be left with a big hole, and that's part of our clean energy future, as you just alluded to.
Yeah, so Ørsted is the biggest company in the country doing offshore wind, and they did pull out of a deal with the state of Maryland. So that was a kick in the gut to the offshore wind industry and to the offshore wind plans. As you mentioned, you know, of the 30 gigabytes that the Biden administration wants to achieve nationwide, Maryland accounts or wants to account for like 8 of those, and that's a big chunk of it. By the way, what is the appeal of offshore wind as compared to solar, for example, or as compared to onshore wind? Sometimes these turbines are set up in farms and various fields across the country. In terms of offshore wind, what makes it better than solar or onshore wind?
I think it's really not comparable with what is better. I think the appeal is that it's a constant source of energy, and as we know that oceans and seas have this clear line of sight, and you get a steady flow of air currents, which kind of make it very feasible. And given the kind of technologies that we have, now we have several kinds of these platforms which kind of make it feasible for these systems to come online. Everything else really is about how fast states and nationally we can move in terms of bringing them online. And I think that's where the real test lies. It just, this is, of course, just in addition to the question you asked, Tom. And I'm happy to further explain on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a matter of either or. I mean, it's a matter of using all of them to achieve, you know, energy independence and 100% clean energy. So you're going to want to use solar and offshore wind. Let's talk a little bit, though, about why Ørsted decided to withdraw from this big project. So in this project, the state of Maryland was subsidizing what they were doing. Why'd they pull out?
Yeah, so since these are like still the early days for lots of renewable energy projects, including offshore wind, there's a whole system that's been created to incentivize these projects, including money coming in through federal tax credits and other kinds of credits from Inflation Reduction Act or the Jobs Act for that matter. And then there's state-related renewable energy credits as well, which is kind of equivalent of kind of an attribute that the market uses for 1 megawatt of electricity from generated from offshore wind source, which allows these companies to benefit from public subsidies. So there's a whole system that kind of comes together on top of the capital investments that these companies are making. Now, with regards to these two projects, which are Skipjack 1 and 2, totaling 966 megawatt projects, they were kind of negotiated, at least what the company said, at a time when the inflation and other supply chain bottlenecks and high interest rates had not hit their plans. And that became one of the leading reasons that they cited in terms of saying that, okay, we're still committed to the projects, but we have to reposition ourselves, which is to say that, okay, we can't move forward on the same race that we had agreed to with Maryland. And of course, the agency that looks after these issues in Maryland is Public Service Commission. And so they essentially said that we need to renegotiate these projects. And that was the reason that they halted, which, of course, as you said correctly, which was a very serious blow to Maryland's clean energy targets, which are quite lofty and quite ambitious, one of the ambitious, actually, nationwide. And now, because of that, the last legislative session actually came up with one of the legislations to renew or look at the revised bids for some of these projects, because again, they're leaving a huge hole in the kind of offshore wind energy that the state had estimated would be coming online in years ahead. And we can talk more about it too.
Yeah. And we are going to be actually speaking with a delegate from the General Assembly about some of the legislation that was passed in this past session. But when it comes to like the PSC, the Public Service Commission, set the rates that they thought Ørsted could reasonably charge. And then Ørsted came back many months later and said, wait, given those rates, we can't make a profit. It's not going to work for us. So let's renegotiate. Did they renegotiate? Did they actually have a sit down and say, can the rates be higher? Can we get different kinds of subsidies? Or did the state of Maryland just say, nope, sorry, that was our deal. That's what we gave you. And if you can't do it, we're going to move on to another company.
That's an excellent question, Tom. The thing is that with these projects, because the way they're competitive, their bid and the whole proceedings that go into it, no one agency can just sit down with another firm across the table and say, okay, let's talk again. It just doesn't happen like it. They have to kind of go back and look at things procedurally and everything, which is why it was important for the state to actually revise the entire thing through a legislative vote this time around so that they can go back and open the proceedings, which are actually due to open sometime in June of this year, which is when the proceedings, the PSC, the Public Service Commission will open the proceedings and will reinvite some of the bids from the companies who had invested into the projects and given their plans. So and I think the mood in Annapolis was that US Wind, the other energy company which has stayed committed to the projects, seems to be getting some more traction in Annapolis, but Ørsted has also said that they haven't really completely ejected the market, and so it's been one of those areas in the last legislative session where a lot of lobbying happened behind closed doors as well. So we will see, but yes, kind of answer the question more directly, the Public Service Commission will re-invite the bids along the same projects Ørsted was part of, and try and renegotiate and see where we go from there.
You also mentioned that Ørsted, this big Swedish company that has most of the offshore wind projects in the United States, mentioned problems with supply side issues and bottlenecks. That's interesting because as a layperson, when I see a wind turbine sitting in a field or in the middle of the ocean, they seem like pretty simple structures, a big pole and a propeller. What kinds of supply chain issues is this company and others in this industry facing?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, when we look at these huge turbines, that these are one structure and kind of hardly anybody thinks how these things are manufactured, but a lot of the materials and manufacturing and different plants are actually spread across the world, which is where many components are sourced, and which is why one of the emphasis of a Biden administration has been to kind of provide the infrastructure support nationally so that a lot of manufacturing can be sourced and can be done in-house rather than having to rely on these supply chain bottlenecks, which we have seen as part of the pandemic, for that matter, which suddenly jacked up pricing, which in a way Ørsted argued that kind of tied into how their costs have increased. So yeah, that's also one of the big investment in these infrastructure platforms, which are have become a necessity going forward to have everything, a lot of things manufacturing based and workforce on top of everything based locally in terms of supporting this kind of a energy transition, which underpins everything. I hope I'm answering that question, Tom.
Yeah. Looking at this goal of the Biden administration to get 30 gigawatts of offshore wind energy by 2020, or 2033, is that it?
2030.
Yeah, 2030. Does that seem doable? Does that seem reasonable? Are we on track to do that? I mean, with this little blip in the road here, or maybe it's a big blip in the road, with Ørsted pulling out of the Maryland projects, what's your take on the feasibility of achieving that timeline?
Well, I think we got to give the credit where credit is due. I mean, This is an ambitious target. It's just about time. But let's look at some of the big components. So Maryland has around 8.5 gigawatts legally binding offshore wind development that the state has committed to. Then you have Virginia, which is also by law required to build 5.2 gigawatts. And then you have North Carolina, which is slated to build another 8 gigawatts of offshore wind. So if you kind of put all these pieces together, you can see that, yes, we are reaching, that the race is on to get to the 30 gigawatts. Everything else really is that there are just so many components to this equation in terms of permitting, because a lot of these projects need a whole lot of federal permitting and state permitting, and then of course issues of transmission. I mean, in terms of bringing all that electricity once it's ready onto the grid, which is another huge piece of this puzzle. And then you get into the issues of supply chain bottlenecks and workforce development. This is not a short-term or even medium-term endeavor. This is a long-term endeavor. There's now money coming down the pike, but a lot of this is going to, Tom, depend on continuity of the initiatives which have been kind of just built into the system by the Biden administration and all the input that and enthusiasm that the industry is showing. And for this to go on, it would be important for all of these pieces to come together. But we're in a stage right now where we're just looking at how everything, some pieces are just a little hobbled, some are there, some intentions are good, but a lot still needs to happen for this goal to be achieved.
Aman Azhar is a reporter for Inside Climate News. He covers Maryland and Virginia. Aman, thanks so much. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Tom.
Midday on the Environment will continue in just a couple of minutes with Delegate Lorig Charkoudian.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And this news, in case you hadn't heard, the iconic civil rights activist Helena Hicks passed away last Thursday. She led a sit-in at Reed's Drugstore in 1955 that led to the desegregation of that chain's stores throughout Baltimore. That was 5 years before the lunch counter sit-ins at the Woolworths in Greensboro, North Carolina, which drew national attention. I had the honor of speaking with Ms. Hicks in 2016. We'll post a link to that interview on our website, wypr.org. And I also want to draw your attention to a lovely essay about Helena Hicks by Mark Reuter in the Baltimore Brew. Helena Hicks was 88 years old. And coming up tomorrow here on Midday, my guest will be Baltimore City State's Attorney Ivan Bates. We'll talk about parental accountability for juveniles who commit crimes and his relationship with Mayor Brandon Scott, among other topics. So that's on the way tomorrow. If you've just joined us today, it's Midday on the Environment as the world marks Earth Day 2024. My next guest is a lawmaker behind efforts to get Maryland to its ambitious clean energy goals, 100% clean energy in just over 10 years. Delegate Lorig Charkoudian is a Democrat who has represented Montgomery County since 2019. She's a member of the Economic Matters Committee, and she joins us on Zoom. Delegate, welcome.
Thank you. Happy Earth Day to you and all your listeners.
Thank you. Happy Earth Day to you as well. So what's your take? Where do you think we stand when it comes to wind energy and making our climate change goals that the state is admittedly very aggressive about?
Yeah, well, I'm so proud to be from Maryland, where we have such ambitious climate goals. But those ambitious climate goals are really actually just the basics of what we need to be doing, what every state needs to be doing, and what every country needs to be doing for us to have a shot at a future on a livable planet. So really excited for the work that we've done. But now we really need to make sure that we're putting in place and continuing to put in place all the pieces of the puzzle to make sure that we meet those goals. And that's really where offshore wind comes into play.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I wanted to come back to one of the questions that you asked earlier, which is like, why is offshore wind such a key piece of it? And I think there's a couple of reasons. The first is the technical reason, which is that offshore wind has the highest capacity factor of all of the clean energy sources. And so what that means is it's sort of the strongest. For each megawatt of installed capacity, you get the most energy. So that's super important. But also the way that it complements land-based wind and solar is that it blows more in the winter than in the summer, which is, you know, it's harder. It blows harder in the winter. It produces more power in the winter when solar is producing less. It blows at night more at night than during the day. And so it really complements. So when we look at how do we get to 100% clean energy, offshore wind is key technologically to how it is that we're going to make that work 24/7 and throughout the year with some storage, but not with as much storage as we would need if we didn't have offshore wind. So that's one reason that it's super important.
Yeah, but that's a good point. Yeah.
And the second reason I would just highlight is really thinking about Maryland's economy. And so like this moment in time is crucial. And I know you've been talking about what are the goals for the entire East Coast? What are the goals for the entire country? If we take the right steps right now in Maryland and really make sure that we are in the lead on developing the offshore wind industry, then we have the opportunity for Maryland, Trade Point Atlantic in particular, but much of our industry to be key in the development of the industry up and down the East Coast. And so that means jobs, that means tax base, that means all of the things that are really important for Maryland's economic future. And so taking the steps now and getting it right now is key both for our climate goals, but also key for our economic goals.
Are we moving fast enough? I mean, are we on pace to make the goals that we have by the date that we have, which is just a little more than 10 years from now?
Yeah. So we are moving. I think we need to move a little bit faster than we're moving, but we do have all the tools in place legislatively, and we have an excellent public service commission that I think is working with all the tools that we're giving them. And we have a Department of General Services that is really doing a fantastic job with the tools that we've given them. And so this combination of the Public Service Commission's procurement using OREX and the DGS procurement, which is a new model that Maryland is the first to implement, combination of those two procurement opportunities, I think puts us in a position where if they go forward as we've set them up to be able to do in the Maryland General Assembly, if they go forward as we've set them up to be able to do, I think I feel really optimistic about what's possible for building offshore wind in Maryland.
I want to play a little clip from a guy named Travis Fisher. He's with the Cato Institute talking about offshore wind. Here's what he had to say.
Unreliable energy like offshore wind is particularly costly because it can't actually replace existing power plants. Instead, we, the everyday citizens of Maryland, end up paying for offshore wind plus backup sources like gas-fired generators. We have an opportunity now to reevaluate offshore wind policy. Wind developers keep asking eastern states for more subsidies as the cost of projects continues to rise. It's not too late to recognize the folly of the forced energy transition and drop the offshore wind mandate in Maryland.
So, Delegate, what do you think? Mr. Fisher is calling offshore wind unreliable as an energy source. How do you respond?
Yeah, well, so I think the context that's really important for that, to respond to that comment, is we need to keep in mind that we have, as a country, subsidized fossil fuels for over 100 years, and we continue to subsidize them. And that has been in the source, in the context of direct subsidies, tax subsidies, not fully charging them for the cost of using federal lands. It's been an indemnification. All of these ways that we have subsidized fossil fuels have made them as sort of quote unquote successful and effective as they are seen to be right now. Like he's talking about gas-fired power plants. We wouldn't have gas-fired power plants operating as they do without a century of subsidization. And so it's really important to understand that when we are, and we are forcing an energy transition, we need to force an energy transition because fossil fuels have absolutely destroyed the planet and will continue to do so, making it uninhabitable. And so yes, we are forcing an energy transition. And when we force an energy transition, that includes some subsidies, and it also includes thinking differently, thinking creatively, looking technologically in a different way at our grid. So for close to 100 years, we have had centralized power plants moving energy from this fossil fuel power plant that is damaging the planet through power lines to your home or to industrial uses. And now we need to think very differently about what's possible. First of all, we need to get as much renewable energy on the grid as possible. And offshore wind, as I said earlier, is crucial because of the way that it really complements solar and land-based wind. And so the more we have the complementary renewable resources on the grid, the better. But there's so much else that we can do. And this is where it gets really exciting. In addition to running power lines from powerful sources of clean energy like offshore wind and solar, there's a lot that we can do with the grid that makes it both resilient and also makes it run 24/7, and that we don't have to depend on backup, sources, as he's describing, of fossil fossil plants. And so that has to do with what we're doing with battery storage. It has to do with what we're doing. We passed some bills this year that are time of use and bi-directional charging. And every car out there can become a source of energy that is not only taking from the grid, but also giving back to the grid. And it just takes a little bit of imagination and getting the policy right to have a very different way of looking at things. So if we continue to look at the way we've always looked at things, at the way that has caused so much damage to the planet, then yeah, you know, you're going to continue to get the same kinds of outcomes. But when we look very differently, there's so many creative things that we can do. It's not just about the sources of energy, although those are important, and that's what we're talking about today in terms of offshore wind, but also about all of the other things that we do to our grid, our industry, our homes, how we operate, that combined really gets us to that place where we are using way less energy and the energy we're using is 100% clean.
Delegate Lorig Charkoudian represents Montgomery County in the Maryland General Assembly. We're talking about offshore wind and the ambitious climate goals that Maryland has set for themselves. So, Delegate, tell us about the bill. There were a number of environmental bills that didn't make it through the General Assembly this go around. But there was one, it's called House Bill 1286, I believe, that did get through. We talked in the first part of the program about this company, Ørsted, bowing out of commitments they had made to programs to develop offshore wind in Maryland. There's another company that's going to step up, and I guess this legislation has to do with some subsidies for that company. Tell us how it's going to work.
Yeah, sure. So the way that this works is we start with the federal government creates the lease areas in which offshore wind can be developed. And right now there's two lease areas off the coast of Maryland, and one of them is controlled by U.S. Wind and the other is controlled by Ørsted. So that's the first step of the process. The second step of the process is they need procurement opportunities. And what Maryland had done in the past is it had set up what's called OREX, which is a way of subsidizing the offshore wind through funds that come from ratepayers. And so when we put that into place, we said we were going to subsidize offshore wind with OREX, but we were going to put in a cap so that ratepayers were not going to be on the hook for anything above that particular cap. So U.S. Wind and Ørsted both bid in to the OREX opportunity. And again, this was pre-pandemic and pre-supply chain issues and pre-inflation. And based on their bids, they were both approved for projects. After the pandemic, and the supply chain issues and inflation issues, Ørsted relooked at those numbers and said, you know what, we're not going to be able to make this work. And so we're going to bow out of this OREC contract. But they said this is a really important piece of information that folks need to get, is that they didn't say they weren't going to build offshore wind. They said they weren't going to do the OREC contract because they couldn't get their project to pencil with it. They said they're going to continue to look for other procurement opportunities. And that's really important because last year in the Power Act, one of the things we created was a procurement opportunity through the Department of General Services. And so the Department of General Services the Department of General Services procurement opportunity is actually going to open up in July. And I believe that Ørsted is looking at that and is likely to bid into the General Services procurement. And so there's still a very good possibility that Ørsted will be able to build in their lease area with the Department of General Services procurement. At the same time, because they stepped away from their OREX, there were sort of extra OREX, so to speak, lying around. And so what we did with the piece of legislation this year is we opened it up so that U.S. Wind could get access to those extra OREX, and so they can basically build more in the lease area that they have. And so where we are now is that we have an opportunity for U.S. Wind to come in and say, okay, well, we could build this much more if we could get access to those extra OREX. And then that can happen in June, July in terms of the bidding process. And then the Ørsted can come in and they can bid on the DGS procurement. So as I said earlier, it's not a done deal, but there's still a lot of possibilities with the tools that we've created and the really minor adjustments that we made this legislative session to really significantly build out offshore wind in these two current lease areas. And then, of course, we need to look at the next set of lease areas, which BOEM, which is the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, just recently did a bid, and they'll be doing another one coming up soon. And we'll be looking at how can we potentially develop additional wind in the next few years after that.
All right, we're going to have to call it there. Delegate Lori Charkoudian represents Montgomery County in the Maryland General Assembly. Thanks so much, Delegate, for your time and for explaining a pretty complicated process. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And we will have more on this Earth Day edition of Midday.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.